You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
We're not going to pass you again.
Lawson.
Yes, sir.
Let's go, man.
Yes, sir.
Dude, I'm telling you, we've been excited about this. I thought we lost you when we moved up, and I'm excited to get you here. We're excited to get you here. We got a heck of a foundation growing, man. It's going to be fun. Feel me?
Yes, sir. I can't wait.
All gas, brother. Let's roll, man. Hey, I'm...
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Turn the Jets podcast. I'm your host, Will Parkinson, at WillPaw11 on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, joined by the TOJ founder, Badlands host, Jets Twitter extraordinaire, Joe Caproso. Joe, how you doing today?
I'm doing good. Always happy to be back on the Mothership podcast.
Yeah, it's very exciting times. We just, OTA's wrapping up this afternoon, and kind of exciting week getting to see Zach Wilson throw a little bit in person with some of the veterans around. Saw at the Knicks game, which I know juiced you up a little bit. Obviously, I don't like the Knicks for everyone that follows me on Twitter, but a lot of exciting stuff. Kind of wanted to get your takeaways from OTAs. Obviously, we can obviously all overreact, but what was your maybe biggest overreaction the last couple of days watching some of the clips?
It's good to see some positive energy around the team. Obviously the attendance numbers are exciting. I think a lot of teams, kind of pump that out, but there's definitely a lot more enthusiasm and optimism and positive energy around the team, even including the silly things like seeing Dan Feeney chugging a beer at an Islanders game and Sala at the Knicks game. The early returns on Wilson have all sounded positive. Again, it's ridiculously early and these are not padded practices, but you're not hearing anything negative or concerning yet. And it does seem like Salah is really hitting the ground running as a front man for this organization, which is encouraging to see. So I think, we want to get through OTAs without any injuries. We'll get into that quiet period before training camp picks up, but it does really feel like night and day with the energy around this team compared to last year when it was just hard to be enthusiastic with the coaching staff they were bringing back.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think the biggest things that stood out to me, from just the clips we saw, seeing CJ Mosley in a helmet practicing was really exciting. We can get into that a little bit, but obviously there's only a couple guys not there. Becton dealing with some personal issues. Marcus May obviously in the contract negotiation, and seeing Zach Wilson throw in person. Everything I've heard from the guys that have worked out with him so far that I've spoken to have all said the zip on the ball is uncanny and just absolutely rips it. And then to see that kind of echoed by people that got to watch him in person this week has been really exciting. I just think there's a good energy. The culture seems to be changing. Again, you just mentioned it. This is not even a training camp practice at this point. It's almost like basically a college spring ball practice. But I do think all these little baby steps are important. It is cool to see the Jets at some of these playoff games. And, whether it's Dan Feeney and Zach Wilson at the Islander game or Saleh at the Knick game, I'm sure we'll see some people as the Nets kind of progress in the playoffs as well. Zach Wilson's a self-proclaimed Nets fan, so I'm excited about that. But I think all those types of things, they seem very small and kind of innocuous if you're, the Patriots or the Chiefs or Steelers or teams that have seen success all the time. But from the Jets' perspective, any little positive energy to keep the train moving in the right direction, I think it's a huge, a huge plus. But someone obviously I just mentioned who's not in camp or in OTAs, obviously a lot of Jets are there. One guy who's not is Marcus May. We've talked about this a little bit when they were dealing with whether they're going to franchise him or not. What's your take on now we're a month and a half out from that, you know, that deadline. He's got to sign a long-term deal. Does the long-term deal get done? Does he get traded? Does he just play on the tag? Where are you at, you know, where are you at the end of May on how this all kind of plays out with Marcus May?
I think from a betting odds perspective, it's probably the most likely he just plays this year on the franchise tag. I do think that it seems like both sides are communicating, and I just don't know how far apart they really are on exactly how many years you want to commit and how much money the Jets are willing to allocate to that position. I think May is a very good player. He's proven he's been able to stay healthy after some concerns about that early in his career. He is a little older for a guy nearing a second contract because he came out of college at like 26 or whatever he did. I don't know. I would be surprised if the Jets honestly made a big splash with a big new contract for him. I wonder if they're kind of just like floating something out there that hovers around that $9 or $10 million, you know, range, where it's kind of the same money as the franchise tag. And he's not in a hurry to sign that so he could hit the market again next year. I guess it really depends how they evaluate the importance of safety in this scheme, how far along they think Ashton Davis is. I know they also have LaMarcus Joyner in there. That's obviously more, you know, a low-cost one-year deal. I wouldn't bet on him getting a brand-new contract before the season starts. It wouldn't shock me, but I don't think it's more likely to happen than not. I could see, again, him playing out this year on the franchise tag, and maybe that is a position, again, they look to fill in a different way. I just feel like if something was going to get done, it probably would have gotten done by now. You know, you see them doing some of the other contract adjustments with a guy like Alex Lewis. And again, they've had the cap space to take care of May. I just don't know if they are going to be aggressive enough to get him not playing on the franchise tag this year.
Yeah, no, the one thing that's weird from a timing perspective is now that the cap for next year came out, or the projected cap, and it going up so much, it doesn't exactly help the Jets leverage if they wanted to kind of drive that hard bargain at like $9 or $10 million. Just because now Marcus May's agent can go, well, the cap's going up and you have nobody to pay. I'd like to see them get a deal done personally. I know that the importance of safety and things like that are very relevant. I just think it's the Jets have paid this Jets tax because A, they've been very bad, but also B, they never retain any of their, you know, homegrown talent, and they're always having to backfill with free agents. I'd like to see them extend. I mean, I talked about this with Kyle on the pod. I really don't know the last guy they extended. Like, I don't even, was it like Sanchez when they gave him like that mini extension? Like, I don't even know. So, you know, I'd like to see
our guy Mo Wilkerson.
See, that one I blocked out of my memory. It's like a terrible, terrible time in everyone's life. As it probably was Mo Wilkerson's, but you know, I like to see them get that done. I would think I'd be comfortable with something in a 2 to 3 year, kind of like a mini extension. There's, if they start, I don't think they will, but I wouldn't go anywhere past 3 years just because of his age that you mentioned. I think he's playing into his age 28 season already, and he's going into his second contract, which is kind of crazy to think about when you look at a guy like Wilson or Sam Darnold that we've talked about, like, we keep talking about how young these guys are or were on the Jets, and now we're talking about Marcus May in the same exact spot at age 28. But if he has another good year, he's probably not going to get, you know, re-signed. So I feel like it's kind of now or never with that extension. I'd like to see what happens. I'd like to not have to talk about it all camp. And, you know, if they're going to get it done, get it done. If not, just be like, we're playing on the franchise tag and move on. Maybe they tag him again next year. He plays at like $11.5 million or $12 million, and then he just walks after his age 29 season. But we'll see what happens there. I'd like to see that kind of get done. It's probably the next guy up, you know, is going to be Q. So I'd like to see kind of how Douglas operates when it comes to extensions, because he drives a pretty hard bargain free agency wise, as we've already seen. Going into Alex Lewis, by the way. So you mentioned this, Alex Lewis today took a pay cut. Now he'll be a free agent next year. I'm sure he's going to have a ton of suitors. Probably not, but what are your thoughts on that move as a whole? Because the offensive line, specifically right guard and right tackle, you know, George Fant looks like he's going to probably, you know, start unless something happens with Chuma. But what do you think happens at right guard now? Because obviously the left side's taken care of. It's kind of all about that right guard spot, which is probably the weakest spot in their offense as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not crazy about it, but it's also not that big of a deal. I mean, we're talking pretty small money here, and this will basically allow the Jets to have a little more competition in camp from a guy who does have starting experience. I think it doesn't signal to me that they're overly confident in Cam Clark being able to really push Van Routen for that job. I think every Jet fan is hoping that Clark is this diamond in the rough who's going to come out of nowhere and win the right guard job. And he might still be a year away just because he didn't get a preseason last year, and last season was so weird. So they might be saying, like, you're actually going to have like a double red shirt to start your career. You'll get a lot of reps in the preseason, but you're just nowhere near ready to start in the NFL. So we want someone else in here to back up Van Routen or to push him in camp. Again, there's no guarantee Lewis does make the final 53, but he will at least be in camp at this point. So I do think Fant will definitely be the right tackle. I think he'll be better than he was last year in this scheme. And he was okay last year. He really wasn't terrible. But I think the weak link will probably still be right guard. I wrote it in my prediction article today at Badlands. I do think, even though it's not what fans want to hear, I think Van Routen will be a guy who does probably start the season. I don't know if he finishes the season, but I don't think they get the long-term answer on right guard until next offseason.
Yeah, no, the guard situation is interesting because I know it obviously was going around Jets Twitter this morning, and the Jets don't need five Pro Bowlers on their offensive line. That'd be great, but that's not realistic. I just need whoever's going to play right guard to be competent. Like, they don't need to be a superstar. They don't need to, you know, be Alan Faneca or Damian Woody. They just need to be okay. And if they're at least okay, the Jets can then, you know, utilize that left side of the offensive line. Maybe they utilize a lot of times, whether it's Wesco or Herndon or Tyler Croft as an extra blocker, or, you know, be able to give support on that right side. You know, the scheme does fit GVR decently. I don't know his upside. It seems like he's kind of going to just be who he is at this point in his career. But no, the Alex Lewis thing, what I prefer, they probably just cut him, you know, free up the space. Maybe you extend May and bring up, you take a flyer on a veteran that gets cut during camp. Sure. But cap space clearly is not an issue for the Jets now. It's not going to be an issue next year, probably the year after. You know, you now have the quarterback in a rookie contract. So I just, you know, Alex Lewis is, I'm interested to see how much that Gase stuff affected him, because I thought he was okay, if not one of the shinier spots on that horrible offensive line in 2019. And then obviously the stuff with Gase last year, I don't know what went on. I don't think anyone really knows what went on, or is never going to say what happened. But that, you can't understate that. Like, the guy literally took a leave of absence from the team after being like the bright spot the year before. So is there any chance you think he wins that job, or is you think it's just probably realistically Van Rod, maybe Cam Clark, like you mentioned, although I think everyone needs to pump the brakes a little on the Cam Clark stuff. Like you said, the guy played at a small school that didn't get a preseason, didn't play a snap as a rookie, and now is going into a fresh system. Like, I have no expectation. Anything that he does on the field, I'll be happy with at this point, just because he's a late round flyer at guard. That's what happened. So any chance you think Lewis can rebound and be a Gase freedom watch guy?
I mean, I don't think it's off the table. I don't think the guy he's trying to beat out is that good, to be honest. So, you know, if he has a good camp and looks more like the guy he was for stretches of 2019, it's certainly not off the table. And it's certainly not off the table that Van Routen starts week one but struggles, and they try to rotate through a different option. And if he's on the roster and they don't think Clark's ready, it's not out of the question. You know, as much as we like Feeney, he's someone who's really not good when he's on the field. And Lewis has probably even been better than him over the past couple of years. So I think it's going to be one of these spots where you hope the surrounding talent of AVT and Becton and a new scheme helps elevate it. And, you know, this is, I think, a fair hope or expectation is that, could this be like a league average unit this year? Can it be the 16th or 17th best offensive line in the NFL instead of the 27th or 28th? I think then next year you get one more big piece to go with Becton and AVT. Then I think you could hopefully make a run at the top 10 if you're really rounding it out right.
Yeah, no, I could not agree more on that sense. And like, the Jets just need to be able to keep Zach Wilson healthy at the end of the day. And that's how we'll be able to properly evaluate him. If the weapons part seems to be shaping up, we'll see how, you know, kind of plays out with the Crowders of the world and things like that. But if they can just keep that right guard spot, can at least not be bad. Like, you just can be decent and someone has a good camp and wins that job. I'd love to see someone go and take that job, to be honest with you. I don't want to be, oh, Feeney is a starter because he's cool, or Greg Van Rod because it's a revenge game week one against the Panthers and we're sleeping on him. He's going to be played so well. Just someone win the job and like grab it by the scruff of the neck and kind of go from there. But another guy we saw in camp first time, and he mentioned this today in his interview, he's like, that Buffalo game was one of the better games of my career and it's been frustrating, What are your quick expectations for Mosley? Do you expect 2018, 2019, like week one Mosley? Do you expect somewhere in the middle? Expect even better than 2019? Because like I feel like I've seen, hey, he can be the defensive player of the year all the way to he's not even going to be on the roster opening day. Like being like traded.
I think as always, there's a happy medium here. I don't think he's going to be defensive player of the year. I don't think he's going to be an all pro. I don't think he's going to be off the roster or traded. I think he hasn't played in 2 years. I think if he could be 80 to 85% of the guy he was in 2018 for Baltimore, I think the Jets would be really happy with that. And you'd have a good solid starter in the middle of your defense at a big position of weakness. So it's just hard to know because it's been so long. He's not that old, as Connor alluded to on our last show. He wins a little more with instincts than raw athleticism. So there's no reason to think he can't be a good starting middle backer in this defense. Is he going to be the unquestioned best inside linebacker in the NFL? I don't think so, but I think he could start 16 games for them and bring some needed stability to a position that needs it, because there's not much else at linebacker right now. It's proven, at least. So I think it's a good sign that he's out there. I think it's hard to blame the guy sitting out last year, considering the state of the organization and what was going on in the world. And hopefully they can get some value out of this contract in 2021.
Yeah, no, it's funny you look at it, and I don't want to make any assumptions, but you definitely listen to CJ Mosley talk, and he's vaccinated and all that stuff, and I think he's probably as excited as anybody. Anyone not named Sam Darnold is the most excited anyone not named Sam Darnold to get away from Adam Gase, that regime as a whole. Another position group that was mentioned, and something that you've talked about a lot on Badlands, we talk a lot about TOJ Slack and things like that, the veteran corner versus going with all the young guys. I've said all offseason, unless, and you've said this as well, to give you credit, and I know Steve Weish mentioned this on the pod a long time ago, the Jets were not going to invest big into a corner this offseason. I think they were interested in William Jackson, but other than that, I don't think they were like going all in and spending big. I think Sala believes if he develops the D-line, develops linebackers the way he has with the Deion Jones of the world with Albrecht, and then, you know, Bobby Wagner's, the Fred Warners, and obviously hopefully CJ Mosley, that if he can just be competent everywhere else and really good, and the corner can just, they can take the pressure off. Do you agree? And do you think that actually will happen? Jets roll with pretty much the corner group, you know, maybe a waiver wire guy, but you don't see them going after a Sherman or Steven Nelson or one of these guys, right? I feel like it's probably the young guys and maybe a waiver wire pickup if, you know, some guy gets cut or injured, during camp.
I mean, I think I understand the point of like you don't need to bring in a veteran like a Sherman or Nelson for OTAs at this point. You want to see what you have with the young guys. And I think guys at that stage of their career, and even Brian Poole, they are in no rush to do these practices if they don't have to. So if you are going to add one of those guys, that's the kind of thing that happens like a week before training camp or the week of training camp. Again, no guarantee that happens. There's going to be a lot of people out there who are looking at the cornerback market and looking to make some late additions. I think a veteran will be added at some point. Will it be the name veteran that some of us have been expecting? I don't know. It's probably 50-50.
Hopefully Pierre Desir makes a return. I'm excited about his return.
Yeah, I mean, my God. If you look at the starting situation last year, there really is nowhere to go but up. But even just from a depth perspective, you're going to have to get some more bodies in there. I think Poole is probably the most likely of the three because he's comfortable here. You can get him on the veterans minimum. You feel a little better about slot with someone with some experience there. I think Sherman's going to canvas every offer he could get. And only if he cannot find a contender who's going to pay him, would he end up here. Nelson, I think, is fine. I think he's probably being a little overhyped by Jet fans. There's a reason he's still a free agent right now. So it's something to watch. I mean, their current depth chart is concerning. There's no way to cut it. I mean, I like what we saw from Bryce Hall, but it was a really small sample size, and he has injury concerns. Blessed Austin's been inconsistent and hurt, and that's kind of it. Then you got Javelin Guidry, who's played like a game and a half, and a bunch of rookies. So getting another veteran in there, or even two, honestly, would certainly not be the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, no, I just think I think people overreact a little bit today when they're like, oh, they're not going to bring in a veteran corner. Like, that's not what they're saying. But what Salah said, it couldn't be more accurate. And I honestly feel the same way. Like, I almost wish Tevin Coleman signed, 2 weeks later, signed this time with the Jets, just because I feel like the veteran, the amount of time during OTAs with a new system, that's going to be so imperative for these young guys. Like, Michael Carter and Ty Johnson and Heron, however we feel about them, should be taking every rep during OTAs to get its custom system. Tevin Coleman's played in it, right? Corner, these guys need to get as many reps, especially like they're all so young. I don't think anyone's above the age of 25. I believe maybe Bless Austin's 26, but they're all rookie deal, like young guys. It's probably good from a safety perspective that they brought in a bunch of these guys and Ashton Davis can take every single rep at safety. Like this is, it's super, super important. It's a new system on defense. It's a new, you're playing a new front. You're playing a new system. You're playing a new system on offense. There's a brand new coaching staff. Every single one of these reps matters. And look, if the Jets do something, do make a surprise move here and go with, you know, go with a big name guy, you know, maybe Richard Sherman says in, you know, in 2 months from now, he's getting ready, or a month and a half, he's getting ready to get, you know, getting some offers. Say the Jets will overpay me a little and I can go be a veteran leader. They do need a veteran leader in the room. I feel the same way about quarterback. I don't think I understand not wanting to giving Zach Wilson every, you know, opportunity to just kind of get every rep, but I do think it'd be imperative to not have Mike White and James Morgan as your mentors. I don't think that's good for Zach Wilson. And I also think from a corner perspective, these guys, you know, Bryce Hall is a smart guy at University of Virginia, but he's 23 years old. I'm not sure him mentoring, you know, after 8 games mentoring both, you know, Michael Carter number two and Pinnock and all these guys is a great idea. So I like to see them add veterans there. Last couple of things I want to quickly touch on, and I'm prefacing this with I understand it's not realistic and it probably 95% will not happen. But if you were Joe Douglas, do you call Atlanta and how aggressive were you about, you know, Julio Jones in the theoretical world that the Jets would make, you know, that call?
I mean, I think you always do due diligence. You should always be exploring any option like this. Julio Jones is, you know, going to be a Hall of Famer. I think he still has some gas left in the tank. I'm sure he is in his mind looking for someone who is considered being closer to a Super Bowl. I think the Jets will probably do their diligence. I don't see it likely to happen. It sounds like this deal could shake out to being a future first rather than a mid rounder this year, like a second rounder this year. And I don't know. I have a hard time seeing, I'm not saying I wouldn't strongly consider it because I like the 2015 Brandon Marshall factor for Zach Wilson, even if you only get one good season out of Julio, because it will help him a lot. I just think he's more likely to go to a different AFC team, you know, whether that's the Chargers, hopefully it's not New England. I mean, the Ravens should definitely be aggressive for him. The Titans, I know, are kicking some stuff around on social media. I think the Jets should kick the tires. I just don't think it's likely to happen.
Yeah, the thing with Julio, the Jets should do it. They won't do it, and I understand why they won't do it. And for Julio, it probably doesn't make a lot of sense. But if the price, which was reported earlier in the week, it's kind of hard to tell with some of these stuff because you never know who's leaking what. If it was like a 2, I would be like, just give the Sam pick for Julio right now, trade Crowder for a middle-round pick, maybe a 4 or 5, and you basically get Julio for Crowder and Crowder and dropping down 2 rounds. The Jets have the cap to do it. Obviously, a receiving core of Mims, Elijah Moore, Julio, and Corey Davis would be ridiculous and it'd probably be the best receiving core the Jets have ever had. Again, I don't think this is going to happen. I think, like you mentioned, Tennessee, Baltimore, the Chargers, Rams. I'm really hoping not Miami and New England. They both scare me because although I don't love the quarterback situation in either spot, that both those receiving cores with Julio and the Jets, which we just talked about, lack of corners, would be difficult, and especially because another thing that's not being mentioned, the Jets-Atlanta game, I'll get your thoughts quickly on this. If they trade Julio, that game becomes a lot more winnable, especially with you don't really know what Atlanta's going to look like. Calvin Ridley's sick and Pitts is going to be awesome, but not having to cover one additional guy and that not being a true road game now.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
I don't know. I think that game became a lot more winnable if Julio's not there.
It's a very good point. And I'm going to do everything I can to get out to London. And I'd like to see a more winnable game. But yeah, I mean, look, I think that's a signal to that team that they consider themselves a little more in rebuilding mode. Still going to be a dangerous offense with Ridley and Pitts if he hits the ground running, and with Smith calling the plays, but definitely makes that game drift more towards the winnable column, as I'm sure the Jets will probably be underdogs in that one, considering how early in the season it is. So I do think he's going to get moved. It's just a matter of when and where. I think it will probably happen in the next week or so. Just too much smoke for it not to move quick at this point.
Is there anything, speaking of that stood out, minus the Julio stuff? Obviously, there's always rumors, stuff fluttering. You see people for the first time, these rookies and stuff. Has anything kind of changed your outlook positively or negative on Jets since the draft? Is there anything that's kind of popped up like, oh, Mac Jones looks terrible, or Tua looks great, or whatever, whatever that is? Is there anything that's kind of popped out? You're like, oh, that game maybe is more going to be more winnable than I thought. Like the Jacksonville game for me personally stands out. It's like, the Jets should win that game. They already seem like a disaster. Even if Trevor Lawrence is awesome, I just don't know how they're going to overcome. I don't know how much he can overcome. Is there anything else that's kind of stood out for you in the first? Now we're through rookie minicamp, OTAs, barely a month out from the draft. Anything that's going to change on your optimism or not optimism, considering, for the 2021 season?
Nothing really. I mean, I think it's hard to get too much of a read on some of this stuff in OTAs. I really like their draft class a lot, and I like the energy and the sentiment around this team right now. It's so very refreshing from the past couple of years. I think, in my mind, it's a 7 or 8 win team. I still think there's a lot of limitations on this roster. There's still questions on the offensive line. Cornerback is not a good group on paper. Linebacker still has a ton of questions. That being said, you look at some of the games they have this year, you're playing Houston, you're playing Jacksonville, you're playing Cincinnati, you're playing Denver, Carolina. There's winnable games there. And I think they'll be competitive in their AFC East games and steal one or two. So I think it feels like a 7-win team. I may end up ticking up towards 8 if Wilson ends up really hitting the ground running as a rookie. I don't have any problems with people picking the Jets to be last in the AFC East, because that's where they belong until they prove otherwise. They haven't done enough to earn the benefit of the doubt. But I think it's about a 7 or 8 win team, if you ask me now.
Yeah, no, I keep getting stuck between 6 and 9 wins. I can't figure out if I'm being like – even if the one point that was brought up to me that I actually find interesting is like the Chargers still only won 5. I think they won 5-11 last year, maybe gone 6-10. Herbert was incredible. And everyone's like, what if he has Herbert's rookie year? The things that I would say to the counter that argument is that the Jets schedule is easier than Chargers was by a lot. Also, they don't have Anthony Lynn as their head coach, and Anthony Lynn's an incredible dude, great position coach, coordinator. As a head coach, notoriously, they've lost 1,000,001 possession games. Herbert only played 15 of those. So I don't think we should get too wrapped up in how Herbert's rookie year record impacted how good he was. I know you mentioned this morning. If Wilson's 80 or 85% of Herbert's rookie year, we're going to have a field day and probably have to sign him to an extension next year. But no, I think, look, if they can get a couple things break their way injury-wise and time and game wise, and people sleep on them early in the year, look, they win 9 games, but realistically 7-8 wins feels right, unless a move unprecedented that all of a sudden they get Julio in Trim, which again will not happen. I'm just prefacing that if something like that did happen, yes, then I'm not going to trend toward 9 wins. But like, you know, I just think there's a lot of optimism around the team. If you want to fill the people in who or don't know, obviously you got some exciting stuff coming up on Badlands. If you want to plug that a little bit, because I know you got some stuff that that the fans are going to really, really enjoy, and I'm pretty excited about.
Yeah, our audio docu-series, our next audio docu-series, drops on Badlands on June 4th. It's going to be a four-part series that is a deep dive into their 2021 draft class, 11 episode focused on Zach Wilson and Elijah Vera Tucker. Episode one is going to feature Daniel Jeremiah. It's already in the can. It came out great. We're very excited about that one. Then we're going to move episode two, talking about the defensive draft picks. Episode three, focusing on the skill positions with Moore and Carter. And then episode four, we got a nice little surprise for you guys that we're not going to spoil yet, but make sure you are signed up at patreon.com/badlandstoj. Still have our normal weekly pods and articles rolling there as well. And that's it. Everyone enjoy their Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah, no, it's I'm very excited about that. Next week, we have Lindsey Jones from The Athletic coming on. It's part of the Athletic Football Show. We had Robert Mays on earlier in the year. And I'm getting interested to see Lindsey's perspective. We have some people come talk about from BYU, talk about Zach Wilson. We've got some, you know, current Jets players coming on. I don't want to spoil that yet. Some former Jets players. We got some a lot of stuff happening on the TOJ pod. TOJ Live Wednesdays, you know, Steven Zant, Steven Russo as well. Draft season is going to be in a little bit of a hiatus now, but check out their final episode. Then obviously continue to follow along here and, you know, Joe and Connor and Badlands Pod, and excited to hear Daniel Jeremiah talk a little bit about this Jets draft class. But make sure everyone enjoys their Memorial Day weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday.